with all the football going on, I thought we should do a podcast that's, we can touch on the World Cup, and we can touch on all the football gossip that's not just Celtic related, because obviously there's minimal amount apart from the various WhatsApp messages that fire around at this time of year. And so I thought we'd do one. This is going to be sort of in two parts. Andrew doesn't know this bit yet. Anyway, Andrew. It's sort of in two parts. There's a bit that's out for everybody, and then there's a bit that's just exclusive for members of the Celtic Underground community. But before I get on to that, Andrew,
well, I'll keep my best WhatsApp stories for the paid subscribers then, yeah?
Exactly, yes.
But I had one about, oh, I'm not going into that, my nether regions, but maybe that wasn't for podcasting at all. Okay. Sorry, carry on.
God, I remember talking about that. I remember Heart in the Hand, and obviously I've said on here before, I listen to it like four times a year whenever we've beaten Rangers. I remember there was a period when they were sponsored by some sort of pubic hair cream, pubic hair remover cream or something like that. And it was at a time when they used to do the adverts, and I think advertisers on podcasts always like the podcast hosts to do the advertising because it gets more buy-in from the listeners, because it's their trusted host that's doing it. So you had, God, whatever his name is, David Edgar.
I got on quite well with him, I have to say, like, in my days going to Ibrox. He wasn't one of the worst. Like, I mean, I know he maybe thought nothing of me, but it was always fine with him. There were some other ones that you could tell they were just kind of thinking, why the fuck's he allowed in here? Everything he said about liquidation and all that, especially in the last 10 years or whatever, you know, remove the titles. I think I was one of only two journalists who said, void them all. Because one of the Rangers historian guys said, what are you saying about you should get all our titles taken away? And I said, no, I shouldn't. I never said they should get taken away. I said, they should be voided. Those competitions should be voided. He went, what's the difference? I went, voided's quite a good word.
Yeah. Did Pools panel not used to do void?
Oh, they did.
When a game was postponed, it would be void.
Void. Oh, I was chuffed to bits with getting voided in, because it wasn't like an asterisk or anything, thought, ah, oh, you know, removed, titles removed and all. Voided. Thought nobody else had said voided.
But I was going to say,
they still need voided, by the way. They still need voided.
They still do. I mean, that was always my thing. I wouldn't have been overly fussed if they weren't asked to restart in the very bottom league if their titles were all voided. Every single one. Every single title. Because it wouldn't just be that they were voided and taken off their records. It would have been that forevermore. It would have to have a wee asterisk that in 70 years' time, when some young lad is learning about Scottish football, I don't know why nobody won the league in that. He would have to read the asterisk, and there would have to be an explanation about how Rangers cheated to get the titles, and it was discovered they cheated afterwards, and so the title was, you know, the trophy was removed from, and nobody was awarded the title. In some ways, I always thought, because forevermore, people are going to read about how you cheated. And so I would have gone into the negotiations of, let's not, you can start your new club, you can pass your membership of the SPFL to the new club, we'll allow you to do that, but your title's avoided. Every single trophy you win is voided. And it'll be a wee asterisk. And then the debate around the SPFL table should have been like, what's the wording to be for the history books?
Rangers were subsequently disqualified from the competition after regular payments were disclosed.
Yeah, that would have been it. I was going to say about the David Edgar thing, so yeah, he used to then have to obviously read out this script about shaving your man bits, and it could be tricky if you cut yourself. So this cream for a moving hair was better. And I used to think, oh, wow. Imagine having to debase yourself so much to talk about that.
God, I was once at Stag Weekend. And the stag, the person who was getting married, they weren't really entering into the spirit of it. And we weren't going to kind of cover them in boot polish and tie them to a roundabout as people did. So I got really drunk and I said, I'll be the stunt groom. I said, I'll be the stunt groom, because I was so drunk. I said, I'll shave my balls. So like, got a razor for the bathroom. Just, I was hacking away, and I'll tell you, like, it isn't until 3 weeks later, itchy as fuck. Like, God, oh, The other thing is, it didn't make it look any better or any bigger. That was I thought that might make it look bigger.
No, what is this? It's a comedian says something about it just looks like the last turkey on the shelf before Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. It was. I wouldn't advise it. Don't be a stunt groom, guys. And I got drunk again. We were coming back in the ferry because we went to Donegal. God, it was like less my Hegel without the nightlife. Like, but we got back and they said, would Sunday come up? Why are you guys here? I said, oh, we're a stag party. And they said, oh, who's getting married? Because I was drunk. I said, oh, it's me. So I went up and sang Marie's the Name of My Latest Flame. And the guy, he said, can you do another song? Because it went quite well. I knew the song quite well and all that kind of thing because we used to play it in my band and everything. But after it finished, I said, I just want to say how much I love my future wife. And there was this wee, like, woman crying and all. I'm like, that's lovely, that's lovely. And it was all bullshit. It was complete bullshit. Sorry, that's a diversion and a half, even for us.
Right, what are we going to talk about? Football, right. So let's start off by talking about Celtic. And
is there anything to talk about?
Right, so obviously there's the... I don't know if you've had one of those WhatsApps that's been doing the rounds. You know, some of those WhatsApps, they really bug. They disproportionately bug me, right? I should just read it and go, well, what a load of shit. But I think it's because sometimes I get sent them by someone who knows that it's contrary to what I've told them following having just spoken to somebody who would know, if you know what I mean. I always remember there was one about when Dermot left the last time, about how Dermot, it may have just been last summer, about how, not with Dermot, when Brendan left, about how Brendan had lost it with Dermot because he'd been having a few drinks and was shouting and swearing down the phone. And it's like the opening bit saying this. And I thought, right, well, straight away, that's bullshit. Because Brendan's teetotal.
Mm.
Secondly, it was all about Brendan was in a certain location, right, when he'd had this conversation. And I'd just spoken, like, earlier on that day, I'd just spoken with someone who was at Brendan's birthday party in their house, in Brendan's house up at Mugduck or wherever it is.
Yeah.
So, opening line is all about Brendan being steaming when he's teetotal. And then the next bit was about how Brendan was in some faraway place when he was actually in his house at Mugduck. It was either his birthday or his wife's birthday or something like that. And you think, who sits and decides to make this up completely? And I remember one time getting really uncomfortable. I'd been on when Lawrence Donegan did Buy Them In Celtic podcast. And I'd been on, and it was when Brendan left the first time, and it was the summer before he left, and I was saying about, because I'd heard from, like, you'll know this better than me, Andrew, being a journalist, sometimes you hear something from this person over here, and then something else from that person over here, that immediately you're able to join the dots between them to create a much bigger story. And it was one of those where, from about three or four different people, I'd heard bits that when you then added that into... I think Dembele had been interviewed or had been quoted in a French paper, and Brendan had been quoted. You're able to then put the whole story together. And I'm saying, well, I'd heard this and I'd heard that. And then somebody had taken and said, that podcaster, Harry Brady, who's best pals with Peter Lowell. And I thought that'd be news to me and Peter.
Yeah.
And then start saying stuff that I didn't. And then there's an element of truth to this thing that had gone round. But the bulk of it was an exaggerated version of everything I'd said. And also, when I then said, so, based on hearing this and hearing that, it'd be reasonable to assume this. No, it's then saying that and you think, who sits and makes all these bullshits up? So, have you seen the one doing the rounds at the moment about what's going on and Dermot phoning Sean Maloney at his house and shouting and swearing down the phone?
Swearing down the phone at him. And he said, look, my children are here. Can you phone me back? It's on your own speakerphone. Why would you take a call at that on speakerphone? Was my first thought. But then that's me suppositions. I mean, so are you giving us a line-by-line rebuttal to this?
What's no, that message? But it's that type of thing. Why would he take it on speakerphone? Like, if I was having that type of phone call and I'm sitting and me, my wife and kids were watching the telly, I'd go, I better take this. And I'd leave the room.
Everybody does. With your boss, essentially. Essentially, you're kind of the person.
Also, whoever wrote that message spelt Sean Maloney's name S-E-A-N.
All the way through, that really got to me. That really grinded my gears, as they say that. It's like, it's no difficult. Like, how long was the guy at Celtic? How long has he been back at Celtic? Just get the name right.
But if you're such an insider that you know the nature of a private phone call, that the only people who heard it were Dermot, Sean, his wife and kids, you know that amount of intimate information and you spell his name S-E-A-N.
That's weird. It's weird. There's so many names. Ronnie Dialer. People could never spell Ronnie Dialer properly. Even at the end of his 2 years, people weren't spelling Ronnie Dialer properly. It's bonkers.
When people then, even today, I know someone who still calls him Ronnie Delia.
Yeah.
Or people who could never pronounce Tavernier correctly. Tavernier.
Tavernier, yeah, I know.
Heaven must be missing an angel, you know?
And there was another one, just when you were thinking, when you were talking about that, there's one that still does the rounds. Come back to me, come back to me.
But then Vic Mark still calls Ian Botham, Ian Botham. So, you know, and he played with him at Somerset.
Yeah, he's got some stories about him. Like, that don't paint Beefy in the best light. I don't think Vic Marks and him were really in the same intellectual wavelength, were they?
I can't imagine they were, no. But anyway.
But we know. So what do we know? Let's put cards on the table, what we do know. We do know that Fotheringham will take a call from a journalist. We know that. We do know he had to go back to a scaffolding job between his two spells at Celtic. We do know that Celtic think, well, he's not exactly some high-level coach. So it was needs must last season. So we're not necessarily thinking that he's at that wage level that we were paying. Same goes for Sean Maloney. So, and I think we do know from Sean Maloney's representatives that he might take a call from a journalist. So you put those two together and this is where...
A journalist? Have you got a specific one in mind?
I meant a journalist in the sense of... Yeah,
you don't need to name names.
So we know that this is... They want to get... It's a negotiating tactic, but we're entitled to say to ourselves, really, could you not just pay these guys the same money? Anybody, I'm suffering it right now and it still pains me that I don't make as much as I did 2 years ago. I'm kind of bitter about it. I don't make the same money. So imagine that was in the same job. And I know one of my other friends who's a journalist, they introduced these scales. Oh, if you're category D, you get this, right? You've been working for them for 20 odd years. Category D or category C, you get into this. So he thought if you were between category D and category C, he would get flipped up. Now, wasn't he? We're not talking much by a couple of grand. Instead, they thought, nah, he's probably closer to D than C. So they flipped him down, right? And this happened to him 15 years ago. And you very rarely speak to him where he doesn't express his bitterness about if you're working for a company. I mean, look at Cunard did it and all that, didn't he? Sacking everybody and then bringing them on for high and fire in poorer conditions. That's essentially what Celtic are looking to do. That's what it looks like from the outside. These people were doing a certain job for you on a certain salary level, and you're thinking, well, that's past. That contracted period or interim period's past. So we're coming to you. Here's our new terms if you want to be in this job going forward. That doesn't play well with me, regardless of whether I think Maloney and Fotheringham should be the guys.
I suppose Celtic's counter-argument was, we were in a needs-must situation. And we employed them on a temporary basis that they knew was temporary. Now that we've moved through that period, we need to sit down and have a formalised appointment process. And you were brought in on a needs bust because you had to win. And so now we can all sit down together. And I agree. I mean, so the WhatsApp chat, which, to be fair, I've just slated the WhatsApp group, but I actually believe it's not a million miles away from the truth, and certainly the Maloney side of things.
The Maloney side of things, yep.
that there is a fizz, he's at one place and they are 50% of where he's at.
Yeah. Yeah. And also the fact that I don't think O'Neill was quite on the same terms as he was on last season, but I don't think it was, I think it exaggerated, as you're saying, about what that reduction was.
But on the Maloney, and so yeah, you got a negotiating situation where if you're in it with Sean Maloney, and well, this is now a permanent position, and you know, it was always temporary before that I had the option, but this time it's a permanent position, but my tenure's completely reliant upon whether Martin decides to take it for an extra year or not. I'm now knocking back jobs to take the Celtic job, so I need to make sure I get this right for me. Personally, because Martin could be as successful as you know, he could win the treble, and Martin then at the end of the year decides 75, I'm just getting a bit too much for this, and I'm out the door. So I need to make sure that this is correct. And equally, the club could be saying, yeah, but we've done our benchmarking, and the market value for your position is 50% of where you're at. And this is where, because we're not involved, you don't know the truth. And I know one is, you know, Celtic, and in many instances, rightly, get criticised for lowballing and being cheap. But equally, I don't want Celtic just doing a David Murray and paying whatever people ask for. And what was the, remember the guy who was the, God, was it Risdale? He was at Leeds.
Yeah.
And he was famous for people walking in with an expectation, you know, let's go in with a silly salary of 50 grand, willing to accept 25. And he would go, no problem. And I'll add some bonuses in. He was, you know, so equally you don't want that.
No, in many circumstances, you don't want that. But I just think there's a principle at stake here. Those people, you employ them to do that job, which they did successfully, ultimately. They did successfully. I think there's a reasonable expectation that they carry on in those terms. Why would you think you would get less? And I know you're saying needs must and da-da-da, but why? Why? I'll tell you about Celtic and their fucking benchmarking. So I went to them. We were the first people. I got everybody at the Celtic View to join a union, join the NUJ. And I told them, Celtic, we're all joining the NUJ. Said, well, we're not recognising you in the NUJ. Because nobody at Celtic was in a union except for the players. So we joined the union, and I says, the union, I'll show you what we should be earning. They'll give you the market benchmarking for size of our magazine, how many it sells, how many we employ. So I took it all to them. And of course, it was about double what we were on. So the commercial director said, oh yeah, we'll look at this, we'll analyse this. And put it. They come back to me and said, I know that's what you should be earning, but we're not going to pay you that here. Right? And you just have to accept that Celtic aren't good payers in the market, the media market. Right? Do it. You know? So that was fucking that. Here it is. So that.
Right, okay. So let me put you a different argument to you. The benchmarking is useful as a general indicator. But did the Celtic View make money to justify the salaries that you were suggesting?
Maybe no. Eventually. Right.
End of conversation.
Piss off. No, like, but the other thing is, is the Celtic View, is it judged purely in monetary terms, in the sense of, is it a service? Is it one of the ancillary services of the club, as it was seen? Is it a vehicle for the club to promote their, I see, are we getting a new strip tomorrow, do I see, or whenever, maybe this, it'll be, the strip will be out by then. So was there other elements to what the Celtic View represented?
Well, I don't know how, but, you know, so for example, I could well imagine under Fergus, there is the global pot, and you have to be cognizant of viewing the Celtic View as much to do with a marketing entity as, you know, part of the club.
Which he saw
as. Equally, I could imagine Fergus taking the attitude that every single business unit had to operate as a standalone business unit. So,
yeah. By the way, I should.
The shops promote the club, but, well, you can't employ more staff than the shops generating revenue. And what the conversation should have been, back to you, look, if what I'm suggesting is the case, then what should have been put back to you is, you maybe I'll be right on the benchmarking. We look at each business unit on a standalone basis. And if you want to hit those benchmark figures, then here's your base salary and here's your commission based on you driving the sales up. Because then you can hit what you want.
Which I did, by the way, I might add, I did it myself. Like, it was nothing to do with the team getting better and the season book holding going from like 9,000 to 35,000 across. No, it was just me and my wonderful Whippy Doo magazine. I hope people understand that I am I'm being
self. Yeah, right. So don't get me wrong. I mean, I think if, which I understand is the case, if the executives of the business believe that the salary being asked for by Maloney, if the manager is running the first team, now there's going to do a lot of heavy lifting in this conversation because we don't know, right? If the manager is running the first team, right? So from that perspective, I would suggest that the club should go to the manager and say, are you wanting these guys in your coaching staff or are you wanting other people? We threw you together in this sort of Harlem Globetrotters team, management team thing, because needs must, back in January or November initially. But now, Martin, is this coaching setup what you want? That's got to be the first question, right?
Yeah,
if and the answer it, from Martin,
do we know? Do we know?
No, we don't, right? But if the answer from Martin is yes, I want Sean and I want Fotheringham, right? Those two in particular. If that's the case, then the next thing is the manager wants these people, so we should be doing our best to achieve what the manager wants.
Right? Yes.
Then the next conversation is, where are we between salary expectation and salary our expectation? And if the executives think, even if Maloney's agent has gone in on the basis of Celtic always low ball, so let's start high so that wherever we compromise is going to be below whatever we start at, Celtic will be expected to compromise. So let's start high. So even if they've started, if it is 200 and Celtic are offering 100, which is what the sort of chat in the group says, even if it's that level, but they would, you know, if the executives believe that it's 150 is the right figure, 160 is the right figure, for argument's sake, or even if the executives believe that the 200 for Maloney and whatever it is for Fotheringham is the right amount, then you shouldn't have the single shareholder knocking back the executives.
No, thereby lies the problem that we consistently circle back to, the issue. One man's fiefdom, one man that, like the emperor with his thumb wobbling it one way or another way, determines.
And if the executives strategy. Want to appoint Maloney and Fotheringham and are close enough on salary, then the role of the other non-executives is to go into bat on behalf of the executives and say, look, these guys, we pay them to run the business. And the most important position in our club is the manager. The manager wants these guys. The executives believe that the salary requests that are in the ballpark, they should be standing up against the majority shareholder and saying, look, if we're going to be debating for 3 weeks over how much we take out of the biscuit tin for Sean Maloney, how the fuck are we going to get transfers over the line in the rest of the window?
Well, this is what we're all thinking. This is what we're all thinking. And it's, do you know what's interesting? What I always think about this. There is one area where Celtic are good players in the market, and it's their executive level. They are good players in the market. I know, like, speaking to someone and they were saying, oh, you don't understand how much of Mike Nicholson's salary is dependent on reaching the Champions League. And it's like, here's the smallest violin in the world playing that he loses 250 grand or whatever if Celtic are in the Champions League. Only the 500,000, which, good luck to him, but he's no earning 500 grand anywhere else in his career. It's elevated beyond.
If he left Scotland, I'm sure he could. Bisgrove left Rangers for more money in Saudi Arabia.
But Bisgrove he had the previous UEFA connections.
I'm sure if Michael, I'm sure if Michael, I'm not defending, by the way, because I also think we're in this catch. Do you know, I had a really interesting conversation with someone today where I was trying to articulate how we might have arrived at where we're at. And so in order to do that, you're saying, so this is possibly how Dermot thinks. And the guy starts getting really annoyed at me as if it's my opinion. I'm like,
I know. I say, people sometimes don't want to put themselves, when you're given the, we've had it in our chat, let's be honest about it, on our own Celtic Underground chat, and I'm saying, no, I don't think this is right, but this is how this person will be thinking. It's like, you know, don't shoot the messenger stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, if I want to understand why Dermot behaves like he does, and then think about how we, as a support, I was talking to someone out walking the dog just before we did this podcast and bumped into one of our listeners, and I was just talking about, if Dermot's way over one side and the fans are way over somewhere else, a whole load of guys who are not as successful as Dermot shouting and swearing and holding up banners with his face in it is not going to have Dermot turn around and go, do you know what? Maybe I was wrong all along. And these guys were right. In fact, so I was talking through how I might think if I was Dermot. Right? And so, and you have to think, if I want to move Dermot, I'm not going to move Dermot. You know, on a scale of 1 to 100, if the fans are, or you know, if you just put it on a line thing of 0 and 100, if Dermot's a position 100 and the fans are at position 0, you're not moving Dermot below 50. You're not even moving below 75. So your best hope is to move Dermot 95 to or 90, and then maybe if you get him to 90,
if you're lucky,
you might be able to get him to 85. So you then have to understand how might he think, because only by understanding where he's coming from have you get any chance of having a reasoned conversation. I mean, my gut feel is the only way you would ever get through to Dermot is to have a conversation of, Dermot, we think you've done a brilliant job for Celtic. You stepping in and underwriting the last share issue was fantastic. Your oversight has given an incredible amount of corporate governance that's allowed us to get to 70 million quid.
Stability you've given.
Yeah. Your indefatigability, exactly. It's the only way you're going to move someone like that is to think about what he thinks he's achieved for Celtic and praise him for achieving it, and then say, but I'd like you to just move a wee bit from that position. Shouting at him and sticking your finger up at him and telling him you're going to burn his house down.
He thinks, I mean, only spent a couple of hours with the guy, but, you know, I was in all these questions I was asking him. But he thinks he's the prophet unappreciated in his own land. Look at what I've done. Look at what I've done. Look at the club I've created. Consistently makes money. Tell me another club that wins trophies and consistently makes money. Away. I know, and this isn't me saying he's right to say this. It's like what you're saying, Brian. But this is the way he thinks. It's like, tell me another club that consistently wins, is enjoying their most lucrative, their most decorated period in their entire history, and it's consistently making money. There's not an, and he wanted it to be an exemplar, and that's what the exemplar was. These two things would happen, and he's, I've delivered this. I've delivered all this. And all I get, as he said to me, he said, yeah, if we're not winning, we're all the bollocks of the day, I think was his phrase, wasn't it? Like, If I only had my £1,967 of the Celtic Opus, we could look at it. Because I forgot to save the file actually of my interview with a transcript as well. I didn't save that either, stupidly. But I'm sure he said, you know, I'm all the bollocks of the day. We're all the bollocks of the day, and then when we're winning, nobody ever says, "You guys are great." And this is.
Right.
I've heard Lowell similar themes. They feel unappreciated.
So how do you get through to someone like that? Well, one of the things, you've got to understand, see if you are, take it down. If you speak to anybody who's run their own business and made it a success and made it profit-making and whatever, it's highly likely that that person is going to think of themselves
as good at what they do
and good at making decisions and better than lots of other people at making decisions, right? They're going to have an element of conceit to them. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been that successful, right? So patently, they're going to have some conceit, right? So you've got a conceited person, because most people who are that successful are going to have a level of conceit, whether they, most, a number would be self-aware, but a lot wouldn't, to have that conceit. Then, not only have they got that conceit and self-value to themselves, as you've just, as you've said, and when you interviewed him for the Opus stuff, he's a bit of a contrarian. You know, his point about if 1,000 people said do X, he'd be the 1,001th person doing Y.
Yeah. It was a million. If a million people thought one thing, and I thought another.
Yeah, so there's a guy who has become exceptionally wealthy through trusting his own decision-making and judgment, right? Also take into account, he's not an owner of mass people businesses where he's got 10,000 employees and would, by necessity, have to devolve decision-making.
Yeah.
He's a trader and an investor. So he doesn't devolve decision making. He always makes decisions, and he's now closer to 80 than 70. So he's a guy through all his life, by his decisions, has become a billionaire. He's going to have an element of conceit. He's going to have an element of, my judgment's pretty good. Then you've talked about it being a contrarian. So if people tell him to do X, he'll do Y. Chuck that into the mix.
If he thinks that was the right thing to do, in fairness to him, he said, if I still think, I take my own counsel, he said. And if I think
because
that's
getting
the right
back to the judgment thing, right? Yeah. So then a whole load of fans shouting at him, it's going to have no impact on that guy. In fact, it's highly likely to have the opposite effect of him saying, fuck you.
He'll dig his heels in.
I just think if you think about where he's at, and then, you know, then chuck in things like the second share issue that we did that he underwrote, that the fans didn't really take up, and he underwrote it instead, but that the reason his shareholding is where it's at is because he underwrote that share issue and bought shares that he probably didn't want to buy.
He wouldn't have thought he would have to.
Yeah, so if you're Dermot, you're a decision maker in life in general, that you think your decisions are superior to everyone else. You're a bit of a contrarian, and you're in deeper at Celtic than you ever planned to be. And all these people do is only ever fucking criticise you.
I know. Another thing he said to me was, he said, I don't sit in public boards. I don't want anybody scrutinising my decisions. He said, I do it at Celtic because it's Celtic, but I wouldn't do it anywhere else. And you'll see, he managed to sit on a public board without any public-facing element to the role. He got rid of that. Did he come to a cut 2 AGMs, I think?
Definitely been at least one. I've seen him at least. I remember when they used to have them in the Celtic end. There was a platform built
That's
out.
That's what I remembered. I remembered one of those. He was at one of those, but he's no interest in that. And obviously, he's
why would you want to slum it with the plebs like you and I?
Mere chance of seeing Rod Stewart at an AGM, I think, than Dermot Desmond in the future. Rod would just come along for the shits and giggles, you know.
He'd be steaming. He'd have got steaming beforehand.
Yeah. I'll do a song at the end.
So, as I say, this is not me defending. This is me trying to think. And also, the other thing that I can imagine, if you get into your 70s, you start to get a bit fed up that suddenly all these younger people, 30, 40 years younger than you, keep telling you now need to, that the club now needs to spend 6, 10 million quid on talent. And you can imagine them thinking, piss off. We managed to get, when everybody was telling me, even when Ange came in, people were saying we needed to spend 6, 9 million because we'd spent so much on Edward. We managed to get Kyogo, we managed to get Maeda, we managed to get Itati. We managed to get Matt O'Reilly for nothing. You can imagine him actually starting to become fixated, starting to be, you know, that way, if somebody has a marginal difference of opinion to you, but if they become quite, I'm trying to think of the right word for it.
Kind of bullish in it, or like a
quite forceful in it.
Yeah, combative in it. I do it, then.
You actually move more extreme away from them, so that you actually find yourself in a position that deep down you don't believe
in. I'm bad for that. No one here, by the way, guys.
So you can imagine, imagine if you chuck all of that into the mix.
It's a fucking noxious mix. That's the problem, Brian.
No, I know.
It's a noxious mix.
But the point is, if we want to get, right, let's be realistic about it. Demo's not walking away from Celtic.
No, all that. baloney that was talked about for months, which we said on here, it's not going to happen.
Right. And we all believe he has a disproportionate say in the running of the club.
Yeah. But he can corral all this stuff about he's got 34.4%. Yeah, but he can corral about 60-odd% of the shareholding if he ever needed to.
Regardless, if we take it to the basics, he's not going, and we believe he has too much input and say because we're paying £800,000 for a chief executive. So if you're paying that money, you expect him to make the decisions because that's how businesses work. So taking all of that into account, discussing how we think he thinks, I'm just not sure that shouting and swearing and sticking up, I'm just not sure that's going to work.
These are primal screams because there's no other way of kind of getting yourself out of this because the frustration's just built up. It's just been a kind of Mount Vesuvius and it's just burst. And even a title and even that kind of escapology of last season or whatever, that doesn't change anybody's opinions. I think they thought things might soften. In fact, I'd heard behind the scenes think, if we get through this rough spot and win some trophies, people will see that things are okay, really. No. Things are not going to change, but everybody can see that they need to change.
Yeah, right. So my point is, taking into account everything we've just talked about what type of person he is and the fact he's not going anywhere, how do we get him to change? Because sticking two fingers up and shouting and swearing and, writing directly to Michael Nicholson to his house saying, I know where you live and I know what your telephone number is and banner, sticking stuff on the lamppost outside his house and banners outside the school. Michael then reporting that back to the board meeting. I think Dermot's going, maybe we should listen to these guys because they've maybe got a point.
I know. And it happened with Lowell as well. He had the banners and the lampposts outside his house. That was the one that tripped him eventually, But I don't think there is a way to change. It's like we live in Dermot Desmond's world as Celtic supporters, whether we like it or not. Well, yeah,
I suppose my point is, should we scale back and be looking at how do we move him 10%? How do we move him 5%?
How would that materially change things? I mean, no. Again, I'm not defending this, but people think, we do the £2 million. We're still stuck in the £2 million project players. Well, Malik Wisher was 4.5, wasn't he? Tonetti was 3.5. I'm not saying but there's been, you talked about Starfelt was 4.5. They've slightly nudged it up. They still
won. I think they've come down. They were up. They signed Ida, they signed Engels, they signed Trusty, they signed Starfelt. And the last two windows, they've gone down.
But have they with Ballot Wisha, almost 5 million?
Because he wasn't 5 million. Trusty was 6.5. Engels was 11, sorry. Ida was 9.
But they were bitter about that. They were bitter about that. We know that from...
Yeah, I know. So that's my point said. About... Yeah, so...
That because man that, broke... Because, what was his line or something privately? Suppose he said, that man's broken our model. That's what he said about Rodgers, didn't he?
Because
apparently.
Brendan made them break the model. And what's the model? Sub 5 million. What would be movement? Movement would be trust the people who run all the various departments to make the decisions and don't overrule the decisions.
Yeah, I don't know why we can't get to that point. Why can we not get to the point, right, here's your budget? Because even though that was working, if you remember, when Martin O'Neill came in first time around, they said to him, we've got 25 million here across your 5 years. How do you want to split it up? And he said, I want it right now.
Yeah.
So he'd spent it. That's why you get your Ulrich Larsons and whatever, guppies and all that went subsequent seasons, because they'd no money. They'd none of that. And they were sticking to that plan because I think in the previous...
Whereas Martin probably thought, I'll get it up front, then I'll persuade them to push the boat
exactly,
out.
Yeah. And even he couldn't. That's the whole kind of life, prepare for life in the slow lane and all that stuff, if you remember. And it was like Janinho, free transfer, Henry Kamara.
This is what I don't understand, right? For me, we've got a net budget of 10 million quid.
On spending players.
Right. For me, your wage bill cannot go above X. That's your wage bill's that. We've got a net spend of 10 million. I'm just picking that figure. So you've got 10 million plus 75% of anything you bring in, or 60% of anything you bring in, or whatever. Because, you know, to avoid a situation where we sell Engels for 50 million quid, I'm just picking a... And suddenly the man, Martin thinks, great, I've got 60 million quid to spend. No. Because we need to we need to bring some of that money in for as a future-proofing thing, because that's a, you know, we need heaters in the stand, you know, that type of, you know, or whatever. But you see, look, if you sell no players, you've got 10 million quid or 15 million quid or whatever the amount is, so you know you've got that to spend, and your wage bill is capped at this amount. And then you get to retain 60% or 70% or 50%, whatever it is, of anything that you bring in thereafter. And you can spend that how you want. I don't understand why that's not agreed in March, April.
But
And then the football division then just, you got on with it.
But you actually do understand why that's not agreed and it's never been agreed. Because then that removes Dermot Desmond from having any kind of role of influence. He's just the figurehead. He's just the guy who fronted up the money to underwrite a share issue and fronted up other money to buy shares when the Fergus recapitalisation came around. He's not involved. He's not involved. And he wants a certain involvement, and he doesn't want autonomy for his football department. Because that's,
yeah,
I mean,
but
I
this
know.
Is weird. This is weird.
Graham Spears went nuts to me when I said, running it like he's kind of personal toy. But his personal fiefdom then. But it's like he wants to be part of it.
Yeah, but this
he
is where I would utilise
the decision
this
making.
Is where, this is where I would utilise. This is where I think if you want some involvement, if you then had a proper sporting director or head of football operations, whatever it is, some title, if that person's reasonably switched on, and you, right, I've got 10 million quid, I'm going to sell, I reckon between Engels, Hitati and Maeda, I'm going to get another 40 million quid in. So I've got 30 million pounds to spend there, right? Because I'm only getting, you know, I'm getting
75%.
75%. So I've got 40 million pounds to spend. I am going to do it, and I'm going to go after two top drawer people, or three top drawer people, and then a couple of 3-4 million pound people, you know, something like that. Or, you know, something to that effect.
Yeah.
That's when I would use Dermot. In a stroking his ego perspective, Dermot, we really need you to help that get, we've spotted a player. And this is what getting back to it, if ego's part of it, surely this would appeal to his ego. That he's not buying shit 2-3 million pound players. That the football people deal with all that stuff. But the three signings that we are signing that are 7, 8, 9 million quid, you then say, Dermot, we need you to help get these ones over the line. Because you're so brilliant. Because you're magic.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
you can sell sand to the Arabs. Yeah, and you get. We need you to get. This is the striker the manager really, really wants. We need you to get it over the line there.
Yeah, because he gets
you're
himself,
still using him in that.
Yeah, because he obviously you can imagine it gets the juices flowing. Like when it comes to managers, because that's where he has been the deal maker. I mean, I don't think Brendan Rodgers would have come to Celtic without Dermot Desmond's input. I don't think O'Neill would have come to Celtic, and he certainly wouldn't have come back when he described the phone call. We need you. You're coming. You get 10 seconds to answer this, and it better be yes. And we know that those relations they had with me felt as if he couldn't say no to him.
Yeah, I mean,
so Dermot Desmond, but can he not just settle for? Even whether it's right or wrong that he's involved, even in managerial appointments, can he not just butt out of the squad building?
This is the bit I don't get, actually, because based on what we've described, and if there's an ego bit involved, would the ego not be stroked by if we went and spent 20, 30 million pounds on some sort of enhancement to the stadium? Or every second transfer window we were buying And an £8 million striker, would that not be much more of a Dermot Desmond, the owner of Celtic, who strut about, who play Champions League football, and every second summer they do splash the cash and go out and buy a decent name, and Dermot secures it. And what else are you working on, Dermot? Well, you know, we always want to enhance the supporter experience, so we're actually doing a £30 million enhancement to the main stand, and that's a 2-year project and blah, blah, blah. Or we are creating a state-of-the-art media facility at Celtic Park to have the best. We will have, outside the big five leagues, we will have one of the best media facilities for the press when they come to Celtic Park, as opposed to, you'll have been there. I've had this conversation with both Peter and Michael when fan media were allowed in. Going to, like, Bayern Munich, come to Celtic Park, and the press conference is in number 7 restaurant, because it needs to be somewhere bigger than the pokey wee press room in the main stand, right? So it's in there, and it's the day before the game. So Bayern Munich are there, and because it's Bayern Munich, it's quite a lot of German media there, right? Mm. So they do all that. Then the TV people, then the Bayern leave, and the TV people are putting the stuff away. You know, all the high-end German media are writing their pieces. And suddenly, and you know, and people are away at tables having this, you know, some one-to-ones with the player who's been put up. Suddenly the Celtic hospitality staff come out and start banging and smashing away, putting, as they start setting the stuff up for the hospitality, and you're sitting there going, this is just so tin pot.
Yeah, it's shitty. Tin pot. I even saw, it was even worse, I think it was Real Madrid that came under Ange. And they said, well, you need to leave at 7:30. And they went, what? Well, where are we going to work? They said, oh, you go back to your own hotels. And they said, well, can you get us a taxi? How long will it take you to get a taxi? And it's like, Celtic Park. Good luck in the next 20 minutes. It's like, the guys are saying, we're on deadline. Can we not just stay here and finish it?
Yeah, and I actually remember giving a journalist a lift into town.
Because he was probably panicking.
You know, he was, I can't remember what it was. It was French or something like that. And he's whatever. You know, Spanish El Pais or something like that that you work for. You know, it was like a top-end paper.
I've written for that, by the way. I've written for that.
It was like a top-end paper. And he's then saying to me, do you know how I can get back into Glasgow? And I'm thinking, I mean, it's the days before Uber and stuff like that. And you're thinking, I'm certainly not going to get you to walk through Bridgeton from Bridgeton Cross. Tell you what, where are you staying? I'm staying at Hilton or something. I'll give you a lift.
Yeah.
Honestly,
I know.
Blogger. How embarrassing.
See that night, I had to go back to my car and finish my piece. Because it affects us as well. You look at it, I had to go back to the car. And I'm looking at my battery going, please God, don't go. You've got all those stresses, you know, you can feel the veins in your neck throbbing because you're going, oh my God, if I don't finish this in the next 10 minutes, I'm not going to be able to write it because my computer battery is gone. I got a cheaper, I remember, because of those instances, I said, I don't want an expensive computer. I want a computer you can tell me it's got 7-hour battery life. That means more to me than anything else you could give me in a computer. And they did. £99 or something like that, but I didn't care because it's 7-hour battery life. Transformed my life.
Once you've had Mac, you never go back. You get a Mac, they've got huge battery life. But yeah, I mean, all of that type of... I would have thought doing stuff like that would stroke his ego if that's part of the issue.
But as I say, his ego is stroked by saying to his people that say, oh, I run a football club, and you know my football club does something that nobody else does. That's what he told me, was he wanted everybody to look at Celtic and go, how do they do that? And they don't look at Celtic and go, how do they do that, sign a £9 million player? They go, how do they do that? They consistently turn a profit.
How do they keep winning trophies?
And they're winning trophies. Put money in the bank. By the way, nobody else does that in football. How do they do it? Damn it, just... Hey, you're looking at the man here. Just call me DD. That's his ego getting stroked.
And I know someone who's been in a business meeting in America, and he was introduced as the owner of Celtic. Well, Martin called him the owner of Celtic.
Yeah, it's down to me. But anyway, I mean, where are these players?
We Well, I said I would split up the podcast. So for the non-subscribers to the CU family, thanks for listening. For the subscribers, thanks for subscribing, being a member of the CU community, following always people on the chat, and
bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to the CelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.